Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday morning, the 21st of May. We should have a terrific first hour today. Barbara Walters is joining us the first part of the hour to talk about her memoir and her extraordinary life in journalism. Audition is the name of the book, a memoir. A little bit later, Rachel Maddow will join us from Air America and a political analyst for MSNBC News to look at the primaries last night in Oregon and also in Kentucky. And we'll welcome your phone calls, shorter times with both guests, so get your calls in a little bit early for Barbara Walters and for Rachel at 800-486-8655, 414-227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. Barbara Walters, the first woman co-anchor of a network evening newscast, and it's quite a story she tells in her book of how she got there. She was given the Today Girl slot on a trial basis, immediately accepted by the audience, although not always by her co-hosts. She was named co-host of the Today Show in 1974. She has interviewed all kinds of major figures in the world. Her specials have been noted by so many people in broadcasting, Walter Cronkite noting her special interviewing talents. She has interviewed many people in the Middle East. She has included in this book her own parents, her sister, to whom she dedicates this book. We'll talk about that. Well, we just have a lot on the table. So we'll be speaking with Barbara Walters and later with Rachel Maddow. Barbara Walters, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen. It always is sort of surprising and interesting for me to hear. Oh, did I do that?
I know.
Oh, gee, I wish I remembered all that. Yeah.
You've done so much. I remember seeing you at work back in 1980 when I was working for another radio station, and I just watched you for several hours and noticed how hard you work. You are a worker, aren't you?
Well, I was. That's for sure. I mean, that's why I called the book Audition, because it just seemed to me that I was either auditioning in my private life or certainly auditioning in television.
Mm-hmm.
Today, when I see so many women on television in front of the cameras or on radio, I'm so proud of all of you, because I think that it's, look how far we've come. But yeah, when I look back, a lot of my life has been auditioning.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't easy. I was amazed how difficult it was, all the difficulties you had with some of the men that you worked with in television. They were so dismissive, Barbara.
Well, I must say, you know, it really was primarily true, but I mean, you know, it's when the men were good, they were very, very good, and when they were bad, they were horrid.
Mm-hmm.
When I started on the Today Show, because I had been a writer, I was not in front of the cameras, and there had been 15 so-called Today girls before me, and they were models and actresses and beautiful and talented and so on. And the last one had been Maureen O'Sullivan, who is was the mother of Mia Farrow, and she was a very talented actress, and she just couldn't hack it in the morning. It was too difficult for her. And the producers took her off. I was in the middle of a political convention, and since I had been doing reports as the Today reporter, they put me on for 13 weeks, and I stayed on for 13 years.
Oh, my.
And then the host of the program was Hugh Downs, whom I loved. I had written for Hugh before I went on the air and worked with him years later on 2020 when I went to ABC, and he was just a joy. And I did all kinds of reports, and it was a big deal when I was allowed even to write for the men. That was a big breakthrough for me as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And then a man named Frank McGee came in. He was a very good newsman at NBC. Was not thrilled about doing the Today Show. He thought it was a come down from doing the evening news where he'd been. And he certainly didn't want this girl working with him. And he was at least pleasant on the air, but it was his edict, went all the way up to the president of NBC, that I could not participate in the serious interviews,
right,
in the Washington interview. And that was when I finally stood up and said, I've been here 9 years. You just can't do this. And the compromise was that I come in on the fourth question. He could ask three, and I could come in on the fourth. Now, when you look back, this isn't my lifetime. This would never
exactly
be allowed today.
Right.
So that continued until Frank died, and I've jokingly said, and by the way, I didn't kill him. He sadly died of cancer.
Yeah.
And it was only then, after his death, that I was made co-host.
Mm-hmm.
And today, all of the women on all of the morning shows and most television shows and radio shows who are not doing their programs alone, are our co-hosts.
Mm-hmm. The first
and then the next time was when I came to ABC, and that was really, that was my huge failure.
The first time you reported on a national news event was John Kennedy's funeral.
That's right.
What a difficult assignment.
Well, they needed everybody they could get. And I reported in front of the Capitol of the people coming in and going out. Now, at that point, I was a writer. I was not on the program full time. So it was a very challenging assignment, and it was an assignment where you didn't have a script. You just had to ad-lib and keep describing what was going on. And I've had to do that many times since in events. And you have to be able to think on your feet. You know, everything isn't interviewing and everything isn't scripted.
Right. And tell me about the interview, because we're thinking so much of Ted Kennedy today. The interview you mentioned that you did with him, and I think it was surrounding Watergate, Barbara.
With Ted Kennedy?
Yeah. Was it a special you did with him during the Watergate time?
With Ted, I don't think Ted Kennedy was particularly involved in Watergate.
I thought you said that at some point that you had done it, and maybe it's just his reaction to Watergate.
You know, I'm sorry, Kathleen, I really don't remember that. Okay. I don't recall writing about it.
Okay. It was just mentioned briefly, and I was wondering about it particularly today.
I did a great many interviews in Watergate, and I was in Washington, but I don't think that Ted, I could be wrong, but I don't think that Ted Kennedy played a particularly big part. And of course, the news, it's tragic news, and I have interviewed Ted Kennedy, and I interviewed him before he decided that he was going to run for president, and didn't seem to me then to have the fire in his belly, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of us have known him, and I'm from Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Although I never interviewed John Kennedy, because that was before I was on the air. The first president that I interviewed was Richard Nixon. Then I've interviewed every president and first lady since. It's been seven presidents, including our present one.
You confirm so much how people say that President Nixon was so awkward in his mannerisms and how he dealt with people. I just found it amusing that he kept commenting on the boots that you were wearing when you were interviewing him.
He wanted to be one of the guys, or he wanted, you know,
right.
He so much wanted to be what he thought was friendly, and it just never worked. When I did a live interview with him, I did the first live interview that Richard Nixon did after he was forced to leave office. The very first interview he did, he was paid for, and that was done with David Frost, and he paid Richard Nixon, and they shared the profits. But the first interview that he did live, I did with him. And I remember that before we started, he was sort of cracking jokes with the stagehands, slightly off-color jokes, you know, just to be, you know, just to sort of belong, just to audition.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I remember very well about that interview is that the first part of it was about foreign policy. And I had worked like crazy on the questions. I must have written 500 questions.
Oh, my gosh.
Boiled them down. And if somebody came in to deliver lunch, I would say, what do you think I should ask Richard Nixon? It went on and on. So he was wonderful on foreign policy, and later he wrote several books, which were really, really good books. But then I thought, well, I'll give him a chance to be a little human and maybe have some empathy after all he's gone through. So I asked him how he had gone through this, what had sustained him. And he turned to me and said, be serious, Barbara. And I said, well, Mr. President, I am serious. People do want to know a more personal side of you. And he said, no, I mean, be serious. And then I had to go back to the foreign policy questions, and I couldn't find them. And I, fortunately, since I'd written them, I kind of sweated through it and went back and asked them. And it was only when the interview was over, when I stood up, that I realized that because I thought I was done with the first batch of questions, I'd put them under my fanny and sat up. But I recall this in particular because when we think of today's presidential candidate and how personal all the questions are, that sometimes there are debates in which the first 20 minutes are devoted to personal questions, we've come a very long way. We are much more interested now in the character and the makeup and the family and the background. So
You also went on a trip to China with him, which you describe as one of your more profound reporting experiences. That trip had a big impact on you. How so?
Well, it was, first of all, it was the first time that China had been open to the West. This was while I was still at NBC, and Henry Kissinger had secretly negotiated to open the doors, and it was a very small group of reporters who went, very limited, and it was like going to Mars in the middle of the Cultural Revolution. And the fact that that NBC sent me was a huge bonus and very scary for me. The written press were not very happy with the television press because we were stealing the show. I mean, we could broadcast immediately, and we were broadcasting by satellite. So I had a kind of difficult experience. It was the first time that I was with the number one reporters from every newspaper and so on. And I think that there was a lot of resentment. I was the only female reporter working, and there were a lot of more seasoned reporters who were not sent, even from NBC. But for me, it was absolutely an amazing and fantastic experience. And I knew, I obviously had interviewed Richard Nixon. I knew Haldeman. I had Robert Haldeman, who was his number one aide. I had just done an interview with him. So in a way, I had an advantage over some of the other reporters. But to be in this country, to see it as it was, I remember, my God, you couldn't tell the women from the men. They were all wearing Mao suits, and everything was very carefully presented to you. It was another world when I see the way China is now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't believe that we're even in the same lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back 2 years later with Jerry Ford, again as a reporter, and it was very different. It was a much larger press contingent. But I think all of us who were there that first time, the president, Nixon, said it was like landing on the moon, and it was. We all felt that way.
Right. And you had no idea how your broadcasts were coming over in the States, so you found out from President Nixon, because he was keeping track.
That's right. He said, good work last night. And I said, good work last night. The other thing that I remember that's funny is that you couldn't throw anything out. So, I mean, everything that you threw away, they would return to you. So if you, I don't know, if you had Kleenex and you left 3 wads of Kleenex and you went on to the next city, the 3 wads of Kleenex would show up. And we had to carry our own luggage and obviously our own typewriters and our own tape recorder and our own camera. And I am so bad at this that whenever I needed my tape recorder, I had my camera. Whenever I needed my camera, I had tape recorder, carrying everything, so on.
What did you ever do? I know they gave you 30 pounds of candy when you left. What did you do with
that? Oh, we had to take it. I was with one of the print journalists, and we were sharing a room, a woman. And in the middle of the night, like 3 o'clock in the morning, I can tell you read the book, they knocked on the door and delivered this huge thing of candy to us. And we didn't know what to do, but we had to take it on the plane. We couldn't leave it. If we left it, they would have delivered it to us on the plane. So we carried that along with all our luggage and along, because
obviously
nobody was helping you with your luggage. And the typewriter and the tape recorder and everything. But I also brought home to people, and they were fascinated by acupuncture dolls and acupuncture ears, because we weren't doing that much in this country, and I gave it to friends of mine who were doctors. They were simply thrilled. And then I brought back little Mao buttons. And I mean, it was a historic time. When I sat down to write that chapter, I think I did it 6 times, because I wrote it and I thought, oh, I left this out. And then I put it back in there. Oh, no, I shouldn't have put that back. It was a very difficult chapter to write, but great fun. And I was fortunate, because I've never kept a diary, but I did have all of the... I'm sorry, I'm in a hotel room and you hear the phone
ringing.
That's
okay.
I did have the, you know, everybody else's columns that I could read, and my own reports and transcripts of the interviews that I sent back.
Yeah, quite a time. It's also interesting to me, a couple things. One is that how polite you were in sending notes to people from all over the world about the interviews, and also how you sometimes had to wait for a long period of time to get an interview with somebody like Sadat or to get an interview with H.R. Haldeman. You worked at it. Barbara Streisand, another case in point, it took you a long time to secure those interviews. I don't think people realize how hard that was.
Well, I, in terms of writing to people, I mean, being on this trip now, as many people stand in lines to just have me sign the book, which is very gratifying, really very thrilling for me to see it and to know how many there are. And they give me notes to write to try to answer. And I still do try to answer all the mail that I can. I think it's very important. And to write thank you notes. Most of the big interviews take a great deal of time. I mean, if it's a news interview, well, that's something you try to get tomorrow. But the others, you have to write letters. You have to make phone calls. You have to tell them why this is good for them to do. Not why it's good for me to do it, but why it's good for them to do it. Sometimes it takes years. I left 2020, as I write about it, 4 years ago because I've been working on it for 25 years.
Oh, my.
And I was tired of trying to get the next big get, and the kind of competition that there was, and the fact that we seem to be doing mostly celebrities out of rehab, and we were not that interested in heads of state.
Right.
I mean, I have a whole chapter on heads of state. I think I'd interviewed almost every great leader at the time. We're not that interested today. And even to have the president on is not that big a deal. He's on all kinds of programs. So it was a different time. And one of the chapters that I have is about Monica Lewinsky and how we were able to procure that interview, because that was probably the biggest get. It was the most watched news special of all time.
Oh my.
So the next get and the next get can take an awful lot of effort, and it depends on the kind of work that you want to do.
You talk about the celebrity interviews being more difficult to prepare for and to put together than some of the political interviews, and I thought it would have been just the opposite. Why were they more difficult?
Well, with a political interview, you know the kinds of questions you want to ask because you know what's in the news and you know what's important to ask, at least you hope you do. And you hope that they're prepared. And if they don't answer your question, you can say to them, you didn't answer my question.
Mm-hmm.
Although we don't see that much of that today. The celebrity interviews came when I went to ABC to be the first female co-anchor of a network news program. Which was a very big deal, and which I guess was historic. I had a partner. This was the second time that I worked with a man who really didn't want a partner. A man named Harry Reasoner, who was a perfectly pleasant man when he was doing the program on his own. I was forced on him. He didn't want a partner. ABC hoped that it would make the ratings go up because Harry was sort of floundering. And he really didn't want me there. And he made it very unpleasant both on and off the air. And I thought my career was over. I was drowning. There was no life preserver at that point because of things that had happened in my family, because this book is a very personal story.
Yes.
As well as the professional. I was supporting my mother and father, my sister who was incapacitated. It was mentally, at that time, called mentally retarded. Today, she'd be called developmentally disabled. And I was a single mother then and my daughter. And I didn't know what was going to happen to me.
Hmm.
And contract at ABC was that I do 4 primetime specials. They'd never been done before like that, or any of them. And we started off doing both the political and the personal.
Right.
We did Barbara Streisand and her then-boyfriend, and then also President-elect and Mrs. Jimmy Carter. And little by little, we found that the audience was not interested in the political. They wanted the celebrity. So they became more and more celebrity-oriented. And they saved my career. I mean, this is what the audience wanted to see. This is what the ratings were. And it's now 31 years later, and we're still doing them. We do them Academy Award night, and we do 10 Most Fascinating People, and they're still going. But when you do a celebrity interview, you really want the person to reveal themselves in a way that that maybe they haven't before. And so they feel that they really know the person.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a different kind of homework.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy doing them. But again, we have so many programs now that deal with celebrities, all of the entertainment shows and so on, that it gets harder and harder to do.
Tell me a little bit more about your sister, Barbara. You thought for a while that the book should be titled Sister. You say she was unwittingly the strongest influence in your life.
She was. And I did. I was going to call the book Sister. My sister's name was Jackie. My daughter's name is Jackie. I wanted my sister to feel as if she had a baby, too, because I knew she wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is dedicated to the two Jackies. My sister was 3.5 years older than I, and she was considered retarded. And in those today, I think probably she would have been diagnosed as autistic. We certainly didn't know that then. And she stuttered very badly. It's still difficult for me to talk about my sister. And she was made fun of, and I was made fun of because of it. And I felt very isolated. I felt I had to audition for friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt love for her, but I also resented her, and I felt great guilt. And I think that a lot of people can relate to this, at least I hope to, that they can, people who have or know or other aspects of their life where they feel torn. And yet my sister taught me compassion. And I also knew that I was eventually going to be very responsible for her because my father, who at that time was very famous in show business and owned nightclubs, had an up-and-down career, made fortunes, lost fortunes, and is a part of that which I've never talked about before until this book.
Mm-hmm.
And I go through what happened to him. And when he finally lost it all, then my sister was my responsibility in every way. And I think she probably was the greatest influence. The guilt that I felt about her, but the fact that I also felt this tremendous love and compassion that I, in a way, perhaps helped me, especially with the celebrity interviews, because
mm-hmm.
I realized that, you know, celebrities have problems too, and we all have our guilt. The other theme, I think, that goes through this book is trying to find a career with children and marriage. It's a balancing act, and it's still very difficult.
It also helped you, her life, with being able to do interviews. I was struck by this, and you were as well, with people like John Hinckley's parents.
Yes. Yes. Well, John Hinckley was the young man who tried to assassinate Ronald Reagan. And his family was destroyed, not just because their son had done this terrible thing, but because they had kicked him out of the house. A psychiatrist had said, you have to use tough love. And they felt enormous guilt that this had happened. And the father never worked again. He gave up his very big business and has spent his life trying to help people understand what schizophrenia is, because that's what their son had. I also write about my daughter and her, and my daughter had said to me, Mom, I want you to do this because there are a lot of people who go through this and they should know that we made it so they can too, because my daughter had a very difficult adolescence. I didn't know whether to kill her or kill myself.
Mm.
And I write about what we went through and what it was like. And today she's just so wonderful, and she runs a wilderness therapeutic program for adolescent girls in crisis. I mean, just
right.
What she was.
Mm.
So I have written about that in some detail. And also, I mean, I hope that this book has some humor in it. I think of my daughter because she was adopted, which a lot of people know. And at one point I said to her, you know, darling, you never want to meet your biological mother. You've never asked me about her. And if you would like, I will try to find out who she is, and you can meet with her. And Jackie looked at me and said, I've had so much trouble with you. Why would I want another one? So as I said, I think that there are things that people can relate to, not just the career, because, I hope that it helps people understand television journalism and maybe young women and so on who are in the field. But it also is a very, I don't know, maybe too personal story that I wanted to tell, and it's only at this point in my life where really, Kathleen, things are very good and I'm in a very good place, that I felt, okay, now is the time to write this book, and if I'm going to do it, then I'm going to be very honest.
Yeah, I'm glad you wrote it. Thank you, Barbara, so much for being with us.
Thank you. I really appreciate this. I appreciate the conversation. You're a wonderful interviewer, and I'm flattered that you wanted to talk to me.
Thanks, Barbara. Yes, Barbara Walters, first woman co-anchor of a network evening newscast and first in so many areas. She is the author of Barbara Walters' Audition, a memoir, which has just been published and includes so many reminiscences of interviews. We never got to all the interviews she did in the Middle East with Begin and Anwar Sadat and the Shah of Iran, so go to the book to get more of all of that. We are going to pause for just one moment and we'll return. And Rachel Maddow will be joining us, host of The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. And for those of you who are political junkies, as I am, you saw her last night on MSNBC and you see her frequently now as a guest on MSNBC. She's also been filling in for Keith Olbermann and has a really keen political sense. So she will be joining us to look at Kentucky and Oregon and the whole race, where it is, and we'll be welcoming phone calls as well. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.